Hey, it's Greg Gutfeld, host of The One, also from The Five, but I'm really The One. Again, another great guest this week. If you haven't heard of Shelby Steele, then, you know, you are a very, very, very sad person. He's an amazing writer, and kind of like he always goes after liberal sacred cows, and he's got a reputation as probably one of the iconoclastic writers of the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 decades, or I think I stumbled onto him in the 90s. But he's a African-American author. He's a columnist. He's a senior fellow at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. He specializes in the study of race relations. He considers himself a black conservative, and he opposes – the reason why he gets into so much trouble is that he opposes policies like affirmative action, which he believes has created more damage than helped people. And he believes that blacks have been twice betrayed, first by slavery and oppression and then by group preferences that have been mandated by the government. I read – he had a book that came out a year and a half ago called Shame, and it's the – in my opinion, the clearest – book ever written on the 1960s, liberalism and race. Everybody should read this book, because if you ever feel that you lack confidence or insecure in your arguments, for some reason this book just puts everything in line and takes every plank in liberalism, connects them together, and then takes them apart, and it's amazing. Mr. Steele, are you there?
I am. Do I feel like I should go home now?
Exactly. I'm done. It's over. I just sold your book. No, but I mentioned your book on The Five. I guess it was a year and a half ago, and I've been I went out. I read it again over this weekend, and I was about maybe halfway through when the terrorist struck Manchester, and I was watching the response, and I realized how much of the themes of your book connect with what I was seeing and hearing after the Manchester attack. And hear me out, and then I'll get your opinion on this, that I noticed how hard it is for the media to pass judgment on this atrocity or its perpetrators, because they're saddled with this immense cowardly guilt. And in your book, which is the most powerful message there, I felt, was that you spent a lot of time on relativism and how it's designed to abdicate moral authority, so you can't judge the evil around you. So I'm just – first off, am I making a legitimate connection here with this Islamophobia, hysteria, or fear with what you were saying in your book?
I think so. I was struck by the same thing when I first got the news of what had happened in Manchester. It's quite predictable at this point that the response is, first of all, there's going to be a kind of multiculturalism, mm-hmm. which is relativism, and we're going to be hesitant to speak in really what I think of as a human way to this profound tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
I think just offhand, one thing that was refreshing in President Trump's response to it was that he spoke in a human language.
Right.
You hit us. You killed us.
Mm-hmm.
We have to drive you out.
Yes.
And boy, that is very that's new and very different from the straitjacket of political correctness that we've endured now for 60 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. He called them losers. He called them Earth's losers, and it's such a relief to hear that after, like you said, this straitjacket. And I'm reading now that, like, you know, there were signs. The public had reported on this terrorist, but they did nothing about it. And I keep going back to your point that, like, because of political correctness, people are scared to be labeled as a racist or a bigot, so they'd rather risk the death of their own citizens than be embarrassed.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And so look at all the latitude that gives people who hate us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our guilt has facilitated terrorism,
mm-hmm.
Has empowered it, given it almost a quasi-legitimacy.
Mm-hmm.
as if it were a legitimate government of some kind. Well, that's self-destructive. Yeah. That's got to hurt us in the long run.
Mm-hmm. That's and I want to get back into your book because I feel like you're predicting this stuff. Your book is called Shame. Now, what is the shame that you were referring to? Because I think that's what we're kind of talking about, right?
Right. The shame is really, I think, obvious to everyone. Mm-hmm. Western civilization is certainly, by my lights anyway, and I think by most people's lights, a genuinely great civilization that evolved over the millennium and has given us, I think, the fruit of many of the ideas that came from that evolution are seen in the American Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and so forth, given us a great nation. On the other hand, the nation that has best exhibited the benefits of freedom, best articulated freedom for the entire world, also tolerated slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Thomas Jefferson went home to his slave, to Sally Hemings, who was a slave, had four children with her, denied them all. So that there is this profound hypocrisy in... obviously, between the brilliant ideals, the great humanizing ideals of freedom, and this dark side of man, this evil, this willingness to use race as an opportunity to dehumanize and exploit other people. And this is a sin, of course, that was practiced across the entirety of the Western world in relation to the Third World.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we are now, I think, at a point across the entire globe where we see this sin for what it is. It came to light, I think, very vividly in the 60s. We were made accountable for it in the 60s. And so that shame, that acknowledgement of this darkness, undermined the moral authority mm-hmm. of America, of our democracy, of our freedom. Well, it was relative, wasn't it? It was relative only to white people.
Mm-hmm.
Black people, others, they didn't. They were on the other side of a border, and it wasn't for them. Well, that relativism is the essence of our shame.
Mm-hmm.
We are paying it off,
right?
And paying it off in a thousand ways. It has pretty much taken over our culture at this point. Paying off that history, that dark history.
You know, it's so funny that you say that because I wrote down on my notes that when I reread your book, and I always take notes on, but it was like something when this it's kind of an epiphany. I mean, I understood what relativism was. I've talked about it, but the way you presented it, it's now I cannot. It's impossible for me not to see it. Everywhere. It is absolutely everywhere. It is in pop music. It is in politics. And you know what it is? It's the key for everybody to get into the club. If you do not, it's like what you said in your book when you said, in order to be innocent, you have to plead guilty in this culture. You have to say, I am guilty for the sins of the past, even though I had nothing to do with it. Because if I don't do that, Hollywood's going to hate me. My peers in journalism will hate me. Academia. Well, everybody will hate you.
Right.
So I find it so chilling, and now I see it everywhere.
Yeah. Well, it's stigma. You're just going to be. We all live under the terror of being stigmatized with that past. For
mm-hmm.
for whites, you're going to be called a racist. For blacks, it's as I can attest to, you're going to be called an Uncle Tom.
Right.
A betrayer of your own people.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to avoid that kind of stigma, and it is a powerful, lethal stigma in many cases, career ruining in many cases. The only way is to around that is submit, conform,
mm-hmm.
and take on, act as though you've never had a racist thought in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every human being has had.
Yeah.
We have to get back to reality.
Right.
What is real, human, and the my argument, of course, is the focus has to be on the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the problems, it seems to me, good and bad, evolve from.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because I wrote a monologue last week where I said that Donald Trump isn't the first isn't a perfect president or a politician. He's a human president, and we began earlier talking about the language he uses. And I'm wondering, do you think that Donald Trump is his election was a pendulum swing against this straitjacket that like people were frustrated for being stigmatized, and he was like the anti-stigma. The solution.
Absolutely. I think that Donald Trump is certainly the most charismatic figure running for the presidency of in my lifetime. And I think the essence of that charisma is precisely what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
People are feel oppressed by this correctness, this obeisance to the past.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes somebody who is not obeisant, who's not deferential to every icon of political correctness. Wow, that gave him a charisma that just was compelling, and he wiped out 17 Republican challengers. He moved right on into the White House,
mm-hmm.
And I think it was almost entirely, just as I think Obama's election was 90%. Had to do with the fact that he was black and with white guilt and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trump's victory is the other side of that.
Right.
Is very healthy in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apart from what one may think of the man, the phenomenon is a healthy one. People are saying enough now.
Yeah.
We've had it. We can't survive as a nation really if we keep in this posture of apology to history.
Yeah, and you know, and you say as a nation, and that's the other thing that you bring up in your book, and that I think leads to Trump is that the fact that we no longer share a common national identity because it's been deemed evil, so that you have all these little split factions now, all of identity politics, which you go through in the book. That, in a way, Trump saw an opening that if he talked about a national identity, he would stake out turf that nobody else was.
Yes, I would agree. I think that's absolutely right. You know, one of the evils that came out of the 60s was this idea that identity is truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you are really just what your group identity is, your collective identity, not your individuality.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump just flaunted that, continues
mm-hmm.
to flaunt it. He's, you know, he is that sort of classic kind of American that believes in the national identity above all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very unifying idea inside of our country, I think even beyond our own shores.
Mm-hmm. You talk in your book, you mentioned the phrase, and you go into it in depth, what I never heard of or you explained it is the idea of poetic truth and how it is replacing real truth. If you could just explain that, because I think it's such a powerful point.
Yes, it's the fact that where truth is really more of a literary trope really than a reality.
Mm-hmm.
Where I say that my biggest problem as a black American is the fact that I'm victimized and that I come from a victimized group, and that I really want that I want to be acknowledged for that, and I, so forth and so on. Well, the actual reality is that racism has, I can say this as somebody who grew up in segregation, racism is simply not a problem for black Americans anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Right.
You can do whatever you want to do in this society, and yet our leaders, and you look at the politics that we follow as a people, all of this is organized around the poetic truth, the truth that sort of resonates in the atmosphere. That truth is that we are still victims of a virulent and structural and systemic racism.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complete and utter lie, and it's destroying us. Yet we still keep that sort of, if I don't nod to that poetic truth of black victimization, I'm an Uncle Tom.
Mm-hmm.
If whites don't nod to that idea of blacks as victims, then they're racist.
Mm-hmm.
That is a straitjacket that is unbelievably self-destructive.
You know,
it's wiped out our school system. It's wiped out. Now it's wiping out our university system. It's moving into every American institution.
And you know, it's interesting because I think that this, I can't remember if Black Lives Matter started right around the time that your book came out. And it seems like they're willingly putting on the straitjacket in a world of opportunity. They are, you know, it's not, they're choosing, you know, blackness as their source of pride. But is that going to help? Or is it just going to further?
No, it's going to destroy them. I you know, they break my heart.
Mm-hmm.
They're so, the word that comes to mind is pathos.
Mm-hmm.
They're figures of pathos. To be that profoundly out of tune with the reality of your life in which you're living, out of tune with the freedoms and the opportunities that almost smother you.
Mm-hmm.
And to continue to think of yourself as a victim in that kind of a circumstance is suicidal. It is a tragedy that we've got to try to really fight against in every way possible. What if you want to scare the living hell out of people who out of the Black Lives Matter movement? Just look them in the eye and say, what would you do if you weren't a victim? How would you live?
Wow.
What would you do when you got up in the morning? I want to know what your grade point average is. I want to know, what are your career plans? What are you going to do to develop yourself? So forth and so on. The black as victim identity and allows them to avoid all of that, to avoid life itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just get one generation after another generation of mediocrity and failure.
Mm-hmm.
Blacks are underperforming across the board. No one can say that, even though it is an obvious truth.
Mm-hmm.
No one can say that because, again, we're all terrorized of the stigmas that await us.
Yeah. It's hard to imagine. You can't hire victims because I mean, I've worked with people who have of kind of a victim identity. They perceive that they're always people are out to get them, and it's just not it doesn't come out. It's not a good quality when you're hiring.
No. It is. It's somebody's got a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, yeah.
And who wants to be around that?
Yeah. You know, your book has when I was reading it, it would be a great movie because you hit every part of this era, and then you've got these great moments. The moment when you quit the swim team. These aren't spoilers, by the way, because it's the memoir. But it's an amazing. Awakening experience, and then I love the story about your trip to Algeria, which is I think was fantastic when you ran into the Black Panther guy. It was great, but I don't want to prattle on about it. I want people to buy the book.
Feel free.
Yeah, I just want to add one last question before I let you go. Is America strong enough to survive this?
Yes. I think America is. I remember when I was in my young militant stage and growing up in Chicago and flirting with the Black Panthers and so forth, and my father sitting me down at the kitchen table and saying, "You need to understand something. America is a strong nation." And I'd say, I'd argue, and he said, "No, it is a strong nation. So whatever you think you might do or plan, keep that in mind. And my sense is he was right, Dana. It's true today. We will overcome this. Mm-hmm. We will overcome. There is still a, and the Trump phenomenon, not the man, but the phenomenon, makes this point that people with this point of view are not alone. There mm-hmm. there is a movement out there that's simmering, and that I think is going to manifest itself over time.
Yeah. I mean, I there are times when I think that this will boil over into violence. During that period where people were obsessed with law enforcement abuses, and there were riots breaking out after incidents, and I'm going like, can this country survive this sort of thing? But your words make me feel better.
I think we can. I really do. If we could survive the 60s,
yeah, that's
we're still paying a price for the 60s.
Yeah, that's true.
But we survived them, and we'll survive this too.
Well, Mr. Steele, it's been a pleasure. I just want to plug it. The book is Shame, How America's Past Sins Have Polarized Our Country. I would urge everybody to read this book because it is so straightforward, so well written. It put everything in perspective, and it makes you a more persuasive. You can make your points more persuasively if you read this book. And I felt that way even after when I read it, when I was talking about terror with Juan Williams, and Juan had made this point on the Five about how we had been guilty of discrimination or oppression in the past, and I just started waving my hands going no. I go, that's exactly it, see, you're doing the thing, you know. It was pretty funny, and I don't, it was like shocked.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's like
good for you.
But it was from reading your book. I was going, I said that's the point. It's like you're using America's past, you know, to excuse present terror.
Right.
And but it was funny. But anyway, all right, sir. I'll let you go. I'm gonna finish the book. I got like about 20 more pages.
Okay, great.
Excellent, Mr. Steele. Take care.
Well, thanks for having me.
You got it. My pleasure.